welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. For a science fiction story that's a little different, here's ART's version of Heavens to Betsy, a lost show from the old-time radio series On Stage.
American Radio Theater is proud to present a recreation of a lost radio show, Heavens to Betsy, a science fiction drama from 1954 written by Anthony Ellis and originally broadcast as an offering from the series On Stage.
A lot of people might call what happened to the Doyles a fantasy, or an allegory, or mass hysteria, or just about anything. But it happened, no matter what you call it, and you couldn't convince the government, a half a dozen army men, and the Doyles that it didn't. In particular, you couldn't convince Betsy Doyle. The day it started wasn't much different to any other day. It was about 5 o'clock in the evening, and there was a thunder and rainstorm hanging around the suburb where the Doyles lived. Henry Doyle was still at the bank, about to leave for home. Betsy Doyle was in the kitchen cooking dinner, and 8-year-old Dickie Doyle was listening to the radio.
Ah, so Captain Spaceman, you're ready to tell us where you have hidden the Galactic Asper Prism?
Never, Batoth! With all your secret knowledge, if you're really so smart, you should be able to use your Visio Autoscope and find out for yourself.
Unfortunately, while you put up such a tremendous, although useless, struggle against the Royal Soldiers of Gremmick, the Visio Autoscope was smashed. It will take 2 days to repair it. I cannot afford to wait.
Oh, that's too bad, Batoth.
Then I'm afraid I have no other alternative but to give...
Are you all right, dear?
Sure, Mom, but that darn radio...
It must have been a thunderbolt. It was awfully close. I felt it. It shook the house. Frightened me to death. Did you feel it?
Oh, Mom, it's just an electrical storm, that's all.
Well, that's all it is to you, but I don't like it. I hope your father gets home early. I hate him being out in this...
Darn radio! Maybe a tube's gone out. I'll take a look.
No, you won't. Don't you touch that thing. You turn it off. Right now.
But Captain Spaceman...
I don't care. It's dangerous having the radio on in a storm like this.
Aw, Mom, that's silly.
Please do as I ask you, Dickie. It makes me nervous.
Okay.
You can help me in the kitchen if you want.
I guess I'll read a book or something.
Well, why don't you come in the kitchen and read it? You can keep me company. I wish you would.
Okay, Mom.
Hello?
Hello, Bets. Are you all right over there?
Ella? Oh, hi. Oh, sure, we're fine. But wasn't that something? I thought it was right on the house.
I was scared, too. I looked out the window and I saw the flash. It looked as if it was in your backyard.
Thank heavens it wasn't.
It must have been on the other side of the trees.
I guess so. Honey, I've got to go back to my dinner. I'll call you back.
Okay.
That's how it started. The great flash, the explosion, and there was only static to speak for the radio. Dickie took his latest space science comic book to the kitchen and became lost in willowy women of the future and their comrades in bravery. Super ray gun-armed, invincible globe-headed, granite-jawed heroes. His mother made dumplings for the stew, and it was 5 minutes to 6 when the phone rang again.
Will you get it, dear? My hands are...
Sure, Mom. Hello?
Hello, Bets.
This is Richard Doyle.
Oh, Dickie, this is Mrs. Gilbert, dear. Is everything all right over there? Can I talk to your mother?
Well, Mom's making dumplings. She can't come to the phone.
Oh, well, ask her what that funny glow is over your way. Is there a fire in the woods? Did the thunderbolt set fire to something?
I don't see anything. No fire around here, Mrs. Gilbert. Besides, the rain would have put out a fire.
There is something glowing, Dickie. I can see it from my window. I don't know how you can't. It's right near your house.
Well, maybe it's out and back. I'll take a look, Mrs. Gilbert.
All right, dear.
Who is it, Dickie?
Mrs. Gilbert, Mom. She says there's a glow somewhere around here.
A glow?
Yeah, she thought it was a fire. I'm going to look out back.
Oh, no, you're not. It's pouring out there. You can pull up the shade and see out the window.
Okay.
I'll be glad when your father gets home. I don't like these storms. Dickie, will you? What's that?
I don't know, Mom. I guess that's what Mrs. Gilbert was talking about. Kind of a glow.
It's in the backyard. It's on fire.
No, it isn't. It just a something. Shining like metal, see?
Pull down the shade. Hurry, hurry. Oh, here.
Oh, Mom.
Now, don't be scared. We've got to think. What would your father do? Maybe we'd better...
You better give your old man a kiss. Hi, son.
Hi, Dad.
Henry. Oh, darling, I didn't hear you come in.
I guess you didn't.
I'm so... Dear, there's something out there.
Where?
In the back. We saw it. No, you mustn't go out.
I don't get it. What?
Look.
See, Dad? All shining and glowy.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. Ella called and said she saw it from her house. Didn't she, Dickie?
Yeah. Mom, Mrs. Gilbert.
All right. Quiet, son. We've got to investigate this.
Yeah, but Dad, Mrs. Gilbert's on the phone.
Son, there's something out there, all right. No question about that. Can't see too well. Shrubs are in the way.
Well, it's like neon lights, you know, only all over. Are you going to go out there, Dad? Can I come with you?
Son, this is one of those times I was telling you about. Fools rush in where brave men fear to tread. You remember me telling you that?
Yes, Dad.
Well, this is one of those times.
Mr. Doyle turned back to the window and stood staring out into the wet night, softly radiant from the glow in his backyard. He was a man to whom the unusual rarely, if ever, happened, a man who in his teens dreamed of adventure and heroism, and in his 20s dreamed of adventure and heroism, and now in his late 30s still dreamed of adventure. The heroism, at least, was tempered by knowledge of his own weaknesses. His life had been ordinary, and he could never completely forgive life for that. Now there was something out there in the night, and he knew that it was the beginning of a great moment. He thought,
I don't know what it is, but it's different. I can feel it. I know it. I'm a little afraid to go out and see, but I want to. It's my chance, whatever it is. It's come to me, to Betsy. It might even be a...
Dad!
Oh, yes, son. I was looking at it. This is a time for caution. Betsy, go up and get my pistol, will you?
No, I will not. You call the police. The fire department.
It's not a fire. It's a thing. Probably perfectly harmless, but I want to make sure.
Henry, please.
Dickie, get my pistol, will you?
Oh, boy. Sure, Dad. I'll be right back.
I don't want you to go out. Henry, if you love me, you'll...
I love you, and I'm going to find out what it is.
Here you are, Dad.
Thank you, son.
If you're going, I'm going too.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Dickie, get my raincoat. It's in the hall.
Okay, Mom.
Honey.
There's no use talking. I'm going. What do you think it is in the yard?
I don't know, but I've got an idea.
Here, Mom. Can I come too, Dad? Can I?
No, son, you stay here.
All right, Henry, I'm ready.
Come on and stay behind me, understand?
I'll watch from the window.
You do that, son.
It's so bright, that light.
We'll get a good look at it when we get past the shrubs.
Henry, look!
You wanted to know what it is? I'll tell you, it's the greatest thing that's ever happened in the world. I knew it would happen someday. It's a saucer, that's what it is. A flying saucer, and it landed in our backyard.
That's what it was, all right. A flying saucer. Henry Doyle believed in saucers, and this one had landed in their backyard and lay in the mud glowing, a soft, rich, silvery glow. They were lost in excitement, and with it went their normal earth-like fear. Together, they walked around it.
I figure 8 feet long, 3 wide, and 2 feet high. Wouldn't you say that, Betts?
I guess so. But there's no door. No windows or anything. How are the people going to get out?
Don't know. I don't know.
What's that?
Hmm?
The siren. Somebody else must have seen it. I'll bet it's the police.
Yeah. Yeah, wouldn't be surprised. Come on, let's get inside.
What are you going to do?
If they come here, you let me do the talking. I don't want you or Dickie to say a word.
But Henry...
I want you to promise me. This is the most important thing in our lives. I mean it, Betts. You promise?
What's got into you, Henry? You're so funny. I don't understand.
All right, I'll tell you. This thing, this saucer, it doesn't surprise me, see? I've known this was going to happen. I'm not like those people who laugh and make jokes about it. I knew it was coming. Up there on some planet, it's been planned for a long time, 1 billion miles away. They didn't surprise Henry Doyle, though. This is big, bigger than you can imagine, and maybe we're the first people in the world to know about it. That's why from here on, no matter what happens, I want you to let me do the talking.
Yes, Henry.
Is something wrong, officer?
That's what we want to find out. Got a call from Mrs. Gilbert down the road. She said she called you a few minutes ago and the kid answered, and then went away and didn't come back.
Oh, gee, the telephone. I forgot. Mom, Mrs. Gilbert.
Oh, that's right.
What's it all about?
What's what all about, officer?
Mrs. Gilbert says there's a light or a glow or something over there, and I don't know. I couldn't figure out what she was trying to say.
Nothing wrong here, is there, Betts?
No, nothing.
Beats me.
Well, Mrs. Gilbert is kind of nervous in storms. You know how it is.
Dad, aren't you going to tell him about...
Son, you better get your hands washed for supper. Supper time, isn't it, dear?
Heavens, yes. And everything will be ruined.
I'm sorry you had the trip for nothing, officer. Well, no, I'm glad everything's all right.
Maybe we better take a look out back, just to be on the safe side.
Why? I was just out there. It's fine.
All the same, can't take chances, you know. Back door through here?
Now listen, this is my house. A man's house is his castle. If anything were wrong, I wouldn't be telling you everything's okay, would I?
We'll just take a minute.
Dinner's all ready, dear.
You go ahead, folks. I'll take, Holy... What's that?
What?
That!
I don't see anything.
What have you got out there? Something on fire?
Oh, that? Nothing. Just a lighting arrangement. Kind of pretty, don't you think?
Lighting? That's no lighting. Both of you stay here. No funny business. I'm going to take a look.
The officer took a look. Didn't believe what he saw. Took another look, and the secret was out. He put in a call for the riot squad and waited. Henry thought for a while, then a slow anger grew in him. It was his flying saucer, Betsy's flying saucer, and it belonged to the Doyles. More than that, he knew it was his one chance for fame, to offset the dull obscurity of his daily life. Henry Doyle objected. And because she left her husband, Betsy objected.
You've no right to do this, officer.
Ha!
You're trespassing on my property. You haven't got a warrant.
Ha!
There's no good saying, ha! My husband is right.
That saucer is mine. It's on my land. My land is paid for. It belongs to me.
Disturbing the peace.
Disturbing you. It isn't disturbing us. It isn't disturbing anybody.
There's enemies inside.
Who said they were enemies?
It's a fake.
You just said it was full of enemies.
Look, lady, that thing's got me real upset. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm scared if you want to know. And I'm a police officer. And I've got a job to do. I'm staying here until I'm told otherwise.
The riot squad came. The sergeant, followed by the inspector, followed by the chief of police. Henry Doyle said,
This is my house, my property, my flying saucer. You have no warrant. Get out of my house. Get off my property.
Betsy agreed with every word. Then the FBI came, followed by some extremely important gentlemen in uniform. Henry was not impressed.
I don't care what you say. In the morning, I'm going to see a lawyer. No, I'm going to get the federal district attorney. A man's house is his castle. You're all trespassing.
Now listen, Mr. Doyle.
No, you listen, General. Sure, I know. You're real interested in my saucer. Of course, when a few other fellows like me were trying to convince you they existed, you laughed at us. Well, now I'm laughing. My wife's laughing, too. It's in our backyard. It stays there.
Have you any idea what kind of beings are in it? Did you ever stop to consider that they may be hostile to the Earth?
That's my tough luck, not yours. It's my bit of Earth. You're not going to touch that saucer.
Right. A man's home is his castle.
Right.
The next morning, Henry Doyle proved it. He conferred with the U.S. District Attorney, who in turn conferred with Washington, and the upshot of all this was...
The object, now resting in the backyard of Mr. Henry Doyle, is, until proved a menace to the public welfare or hostile to these United States, his property, and shall remain inviolate.
The Army didn't agree. Neither did the police or any other law enforcement agency. A battery of heavy guns, 8 tanks, a machine gun unit, 2 flamethrowers, as well as a picked company of commandos were brought into the scene. The road was blocked off, and the siege of the Doyle's residence began. 5 days later, the saucer lay still glowing quietly, and Mr. and Mrs. Doyle stood by the incinerator watching it. Betsy surmised,
If they're afraid of us, you'd think they'd try and get away.
Maybe they're biding their time. It must all be as strange to them as it is to us. Fine welcome they must think they're getting, if they've got some kind of instrument inside that can see what's out on the road.
I still can't understand how the people inside the saucer get out.
It's funny. I've been over the thing 12 times. There isn't even a seam I can see.
Do you think maybe we ought to let those scientists take a look at it? They can't hurt it.
Oh, no. Now don't you start. This is ours. You let one of those fellows get a hand on it, and the next thing you'll know, we won't have our flying saucer anymore. Uh-uh.
Dad?
What is it, son?
There's about 40 people outside. They're from newspapers. They want to talk to you.
Oh, all right. Tell them to wait. I'll be there in a minute.
Okay, Dad.
Oh, Henry, it is wonderful, isn't it? Nothing like this has ever happened to us. I never thought it would.
You know, old Cattercomb at the bank called me yesterday and offered me the vice presidency.
No.
Yeah. I didn't tell you because that's nothing to what offers we'll get. Honey, this is our big moment. It's our big moment in history. History, Betts. I'm not going to let this get away from us. I've waited all my life for it.
What are you going to tell the newspaper people?
Whatever they want to know. Come on, we'll see them together. Ladies and gentlemen, hello.
There he is, there he is. Mr. Doyle, Mr. Doyle.
Now, ladies and gentlemen of the press, you've asked my opinion of the object. Do I think it is a ship from out of space? My answer is yes. In due time, as soon as the government and I come to terms, and that ridiculous show of force outside my house is withdrawn, you'll be allowed to see the thing and to take your pictures. That's all I can say for the moment. I know you will excuse me. There are many things to attend to.
Thank you, Mr. Doyle. Thank you.
Henry, you're wonderful. You sounded just like a senator, even a president.
Oh, no. I'm still plain old Henry Doyle, your loving husband, whose house is his castle.
A senatorial committee arrived to investigate. Henry and Betsy Doyle were polite, allowed them to see the saucer, but no more. And the word spread until there wasn't a corner of the globe that didn't know about the Doyle's flying saucer. A week later, the Supreme Court was in session debating the district attorney's decision. The country was divided. Half said the saucer belonged to the Doyles. The other half thought it was a shame. They never made quite clear what the shame was, but it was. The Doyles sat in their living room, Betsy sewing, Henry reading letters. It was a cool night, dark, except for the radiance of the saucer outside.
Here's an offer for exclusive rights to photograph it and use the picture on the back of a cereal box. Toasted barley bits, $2,000.
I suppose we could, couldn't we?
We can do anything we want, honey. That thing belongs to us, you and me. It's the boy's future. We'll be remembered for this. Posterity will remember us. Honey.
Look out for the needle.
Sorry. Honey.
Yes, dear.
I've never said this to you. I guess maybe I haven't thought much about it for a while, but this saucer, I mean, it's what I've always wanted for you, you know?
I think so.
Like when we were first married. I dreamed of what it would be like. I'd buy you the world, the stars. Kind of romantic junk, but you know what I mean?
I know. You did give me all of that.
No, but I can now. That saucer belongs to you, Betts. Whatever it brings us, it's what I would have liked to have given you. Now I can.
It's funny. You haven't talked like this for a long time. I know how you feel about me, Dickie, but it's different hearing you say it. It's new again. I think I'm going to cry.
You don't have to do that. Everything's fine.
And everything was fine for two more days. And then one evening, 3 weeks after the saucer had landed, it was the small Doyle, Dickie, who noticed what was taking place in the backyard.
The saucer.
What about it?
Something's happening to it.
What?
The light's going out.
That's silly. It couldn't.
Well, it is.
He's right. It's not as bright as it was.
Oh, Henry.
You can almost see it getting dimmer.
What do you think's happening?
I don't know.
Maybe they're going to come out now?
I don't know.
Henry? I'm afraid.
No, you don't have to be.
Something's wrong with it. I can feel it.
That's silly. It's the people inside I'm worried about. Maybe it's the power supply or their own special air.
I'm afraid.
It's getting dark awful quickly, Dad.
We've got to do something.
What?
Maybe the scientists. Yeah, that's it, the scientists. You go and call them. They're at the Grand Hotel, all of them. Hurry, Betsy.
The scientists came. Grave and wise, they rapped on the thing, listened with super stethoscopes, took readings on wonderful electronic devices, and shook their heads. That night, at exactly 11:04 p.m., the glow went out. And as it did so, the saucer began to shrivel, grew smaller and smaller. The group watched silently.
Can't somebody help? It's just melting away.
What can you do?
It's dying. Henry, it's dying. We've got to help.
I don't know.
If we could get a sample of the substance, but we can't make a dent in it.
I won't have you banging on it like that when it's dying. Stop it! Stop it!
Oh, honey.
I mean it. Let it alone.
It's no use anyway. It'll be gone soon. You can stop. It isn't any good.
It was alive, Henry. It was alive.
Honey, no. There were people in it. People from another planet. They couldn't live on Earth, that's all. The air and...
No, you're wrong. I feel as if I've lost. I don't know. Like losing Dickie. I tell you, it was alive. There wasn't anyone inside. That's it. The thing was all of it.
You're tired, Mrs. Doyle. Why don't you go inside and rest?
You're fools. A woman knows. It was an animal, or maybe like us, only made differently. It was alive. Now it's dying.
It's almost gone.
Yes. Too bad we couldn't have examined it earlier.
Dad, listen.
It's gone.
Yes.
Did you hear a sound?
Yes, almost like a voice sighing.
I wonder.
On the spot where the thing had rested, there was nothing. Not a fragment. And although they didn't know why, the scientists and Henry Doyle stood for 5 minutes, just looking. Nobody spoke a word, and there was a great quiet, a sadness in the air.
I feel sad. I don't know why.
Strange. I do too.
Dad, why are you crying?
Am I? That's funny.
Mom was crying too. What happened?
They all went away, silently. The scientists, the guns and tanks, the soldiers and police, and finally, only the Doyles were left in their house, which was their castle.
Do you really think it was alive?
Yes. I think it was hurt and fell down, and we didn't understand.
If I hadn't been so selfish, wanting to keep to myself, we might have saved it.
Oh, no, it's probably better this way.
You know, everybody felt what you felt, sad, even the general and the scientists.
I wonder what it was, where it came from.
Somewhere up there. Perhaps one day another will come and live.
You have been listening to an American Radio Theater recreation of Heavens to Betsy, written by Anthony Ellis. In our story, you heard Dan Schindler as the narrator and spaceman, Liz Roach as Betsy, Dave Leese as Henry, Joy Jackson as Dickie, Pat McNally as Ptoth and scientist, Linda Rasmussen as the DA, Beth Schlansky as Ella, Terry Elder as officer. This was originally broadcast on March 24, 1954, as an offering of On Stage. I'm your announcer, Kim Turner, whom you also heard as the General, and you have been listening to ART, the American Radio Theater.
We'll be be back in just a moment. We return to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hey, let's listen to a little bit from Kraft Music Hall.
The Kraft Music Hall with Bing Crosby, John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, Marilyn Maxwell, the Music Maids and Men, Yuki, the Charioteers, and Bing's distinguished guest for this evening, a man just back from the China-Burma-India Theater of Operations, Mr. Keenan Wynn, the Private Mulvihill of See Here, Private Hargrove, and see here's Bing Crosby.
When you're down and out, lift up your head and shout, there's gonna be a great day. Angels in the sky promise that by and by there's gonna be a great day. Gabriel will warn you some early morning. You will hear his horn. It's not far away. Hold up your hand and say there's gonna be a great day. When skies were dark, came Noah's Ark. Amen. When lions roared, came Daniel's Lord. Amen. Lord, help those who pray. And on judgment day, if you believe, he shall receive you all. Hold up your hands and say, there's gonna be a great day.
This is the old Kraft Music Hall, friends, cutting out for all over the world, where a winding black line on a battle map is the infantry. The infantry that goes forward on foot and fights hand to hand, but has to be backed up and supplied by vehicles driven by gasoline, the gasoline that we're saving this summer by snatching what vacation we're lucky enough to get as near home as possible. If there's a lake near you or a trout stream, there's good fishing. If you live near the mountains, there's camping. If you live near the ocean, the beach is always an attractive spot.
That's right, Bing. I went to the beach last Sunday.
See what I mean? I was there.
How did you like my new bathing suit, Bing?
Oh, you mean that pink job with the white braid and the little red bathing girl down the back with the cerise scallops on the hem?
Uh-huh. Did you like it?
Didn't notice it. How did you like my new swimsuit?
Well, I thought the sleeves were a little too long.
My fingers get cold.
It must keep your knees nice and warm, too.
Yes, it's a little lengthy. Where did you disappear to as soon as you saw me? And I was going to offer to give you some swimming lessons.
Well, Yuki was kind enough to give me a lesson.
Yuki?
Yes. Prize something? I enjoy doing things like that. Would you like another lesson this Sunday, Miss Maxwell?
No, thank you. I've had my lesson.
Seems to me I experienced a rare piece of good fortune at the beach last Sunday, Yuki.
Yeah, what?
Missed you. First break I've had in a long time.
Well, that's probably because my little four-year-old nephew buried me in the sand.
A great public service.
You know, I thought maybe, Bing, that you can give me some advice on how to raise children.
You're just raising the one?
That's all. Why?
Get some children, are you? Wholesaler, you know.
How have you been entertaining the youngster, Yuki?
Well, in different ways. Last night we read a book.
Who read to who?
Say, do you like children, Miss Maxwell?
Oh, of course. I like to watch them at play.
Well, I like that, too.
And I like to hide and listen to their conversations.
Well, I like that, too.
You know, and when they're tiny toddlers with round, hard tummies and hands like little starfish, and they're still talking baby talk, oh, I like to squeeze them tight and smother them with kisses.
I like that, too.
Say, I'll tell you how you can help me, Bing.
What?
See, when the kid's naughty, how do I go about punishing him?
Punish the kid?
Yeah.
Well, you use psychology, Yuki. That's what I did. And for years, I had their number.
Then what happened?
I was outnumbered.
This brings us to the charioteers with their tenor, Wilfred Williams, one of the newest members of the U.S. Army, making his last appearance for the duration. Sing it, men. The charioteers, and very fine, too. Before La Max and I resume, here is another member of our group.
You homemakers, I'm sure, are serving salads all year round for good nutrition. But when spring comes along, it seems that everyone wants more and more salads. And, of course, most folks want them topped off with lots of Miracle Whip. For it's the dressing that makes the salad. And Miracle Whip is the salad dressing millions prefer. Miracle Whip has a lively flavor that's different from any other. A just-right flavor that comes from an exclusive Kraft recipe. Actually, Miracle Whip combines the qualities of zesty boiled dressing and fine mayonnaise. And thanks to Kraft's patented beater, it's marvelously smooth. So get a jar of Miracle Whip salad dressing tomorrow. Your family will enjoy your salads more when you serve them with Miracle Whip. It's far and away America's favorite.
Take it easy. Take it easy. Don't you know it's more romantic when a dance is slow? Take it easy, take it easy. What's the good of feeling high when all the lights are low? Take it easy, take it easy. We got lots of time ahead of us, the night is young. Take it easy, take it easy. Don't you know this music should be swayed instead of swung? Take your time, dance it with ease. Take your time, take your time, slow as you please.
Take it easy, take it easy.
Don't you know you're not supposed to make a Roomba jump?
Take it easy, take it easy.
If you don't, I fear that our romance will hit a bump.
Take it easy, take it easy.
Don't you know it's time for romance when the music sweeps?
Take it easy,
take it easy.
Take it easy,
take it easy. When I'm in a mood to scream, he must be Lindy Hop.
Don't forget that I'm your partner, not a traffic cop.
Is there any fun in running in a one-man race?
If you do, you're gonna meet the Mabel face to face.
Take it easy.
Take it easy.
Those lucky many who have caught Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's happy screen treatment of Sergeant Marion Hargrove's bestseller, See Her, Private Hargrove, are without exception enthusiastic about the fine work of Mr. Keenan Wynn as Mulvihill. Son of comedian Ed Wynn and grandson of that fine screen actor, the late Frank Keenan, Keenan Wynn is just back from a 3 months USO tour of the China-Burma-India Theater of Operations. We owe a great debt to performers like Wynn who keep up the morale of our fighting men far from home. Accordingly, it's a very real pleasure to have Keenan Wynn with us this evening.
Well, that's very, very nice, Bing, but I've been told the real reason I'm here.
Real reason? What real reason?
Well, I've heard you've always dreamed of standing here the Thursday after the Kentucky Derby with a win.
You're so right. Oh, well, since you have chosen deliberately to misconstrue my words, I'll admit that I have had my dreamy moments.
And I sincerely hope last Saturday was one of your pensive days.
Back to that animal rather modestly. 600 or 700 more winners and I'm even. However, tell us of things in the China-Burma-India Theater, Keenan.
Well, they're about the same as in all other theaters, Bing. Tongues for sparring.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of room down toward the front.
Fairly rugged out there, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, much more than fairly. But those GIs up there don't back away from anything. I've seen those guys. They've gone up against Japs, the jungle, the heat, rain, disease, everything else the country can dish out, and be forced to turn right around and face something that they haven't even been included in their training.
What?
Me.
They're not compelled to attend the shows, are they?
Well, where could they go? The only way to kill time is to go to the edge of the jungle and watch your breath go in and out. Some of those fighter bases are so deep in the jungle, the only way they can be supplied is by bundles dropped from planes by the Air Service Command.
Well, it must be a great sight to see the supplies come flying out of the sky.
Mm-hmm. Burma's one of the few spots in the world where American soldiers on active duty can watch the arrival of their bundles from heaven.
Oh, nice. By that method of pushing things out of planes, can they get everything they want into a base?
Oh, sure.
They can, huh?
You ought to see how they pack that stuff. Instead of Excelsior or sawdust, the essential supplies are wrapped in rice.
Oh,
well, naturally, that can be eaten.
What happens if it falls in the mud?
Rice pudding.
And if the bundle breaks in the air?
Well, so that the shower of rice won't be a total loss, a couple of Burmese natives rush right out and get married.
But under normal conditions, the rice protects the stuff satisfactorily.
Oh, sure. Delicate things, too, like medical supplies, food, cigarettes, reading matter.
What kind of reading matter?
You wouldn't be interested.
Why?
No racing form.
Well, you mean people read other things?
One of the packages dropped contained an overseas copy of the magazine Newsweek, in which I read the first reviews I'd seen of the picture See Here, Private Hargrove.
You mean you left the copy before Hargrove was released?
I thought I'd better.
Boy, I sure envy you actors doing all that traveling. How does it feel to be a globe trotter?
You ought to know how it feels to be a globe trotter.
Keenan, is that the Burma Road really as winding as they say it is?
Well, to get the details on the Burma Road, Ken, you'd have to talk a very high Japanese. But our unit topped the Burma Road. We had Paulette Goddard. More curve.
Listen, in flying over that Burma Road, you didn't happen to notice if they had those...
You mean?
Yeah.
They've got them.
No. Really? Those signs?
Oh, sure. They say... If there's mud and dirt and Japanese and mosquitoes and fleas in your BVDs, Burma Road.
Oh.
Sounds like a great spot to blow. Love to blow that spot.
Who besides Paulette Goddard was in your unit, Keenan?
Bill Gargan and Andy Arcari, who played the accordion.
Say, what chance will the ukulele player have?
Well, those guys are so hungry for entertainment, Yuki, they even like you. What theater of war would you like to play?
Well, I believe I can make an impression in the Chinese theater.
Or the Burma Chinese theater?
Rama's Chinese theater.
Well, maybe it's better that way, Yuki. Every act they send over has to have something for the boys.
Well, how about me? I could act. I could recite. Look. It was the schooner Hesperus that sailed the wintry sea.
Drop the net.
And the skipper had taken his little daughter to bear him company.
How's that? Every act has got to have something for the boys.
Well, how about me?
Something for the boys. Follow the leader, kid?
Yeah. Just a minute here. What's wrong with me? Is it because I'm too short or because I'm not a blonde?
See me later, I'll explain the whole thing to you.
I'll wait.
Now, about you, Bing, you're going offshore soon, I imagine.
Looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Suppose Bob Hope's told you all about the equipment you'll need on the trip.
Equipment?
Uh-huh.
All Hope takes with him is an egg beater.
You mean he didn't tell you about these little white pills?
What'll they do?
What'll they do?
Yeah.
Well, it'll keep you well. You've heard of malarial mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Well, after taking these white pills, mosquitoes bit us and bit us. And not one of them got malaria.
Where do I get these marvelous panaceas?
Well, now, it just so happens I have a few left, which I'll give you.
Oh, thank you, Keenan.
For a buck.
Well, you talked me into it. Here's the buck.
Of course, after you've had these little white pills, there's one more thing you really should have.
What?
These little red pills.
What do they do?
They activate the white ones. The white ones won't work without the red. Now, both pills and you're all set. Just $2.
Well, here's the extra buck.
Except for one thing.
More pills?
No, you see, each of those pills must be taken every hour on the hour alternating.
What?
Now, if you haven't an accurate watch...
Meaning?
Naturally.
Naturally. How much for the watch?
$50. But that includes a genuine gunmetal case.
Case, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, I thought for a minute I was just getting the works.
Oh, very cute, Nick. Well, what do you say?
Any smaller joke.
Oh, yes. Tiny. Any place you're going, I've got just what you need. Mosquito netting, if you're going where there are mosquitoes.
Well, if I'm not?
I'll sell you a few mosquitoes.
Don't.
Which way are you heading?
Well, I'll tell you, Keenan, I haven't quite decided yet, but when the time comes, I'll be packing my grip. I'll be going away, for I'm making this trip. They won't let me say.
Well, let me tell you, Bing and Bingo, it's true. The whole darn G.I. world is waiting for you.
I'm gonna dig 'em soon. Make Zach's all sad.
All he wants a tune.
Careful, Jack. Might make him fight and mad.
Just make them mad like that and listen to me.
Tell me, tell me, tell me, tell me.
Oh, brother, what a secret weapon you'll be.
I'll take my shorts and long undies. Gonna work weekdays and Sundays.
Better learn a little Chinese.
Una gazetta, una kala, makala.
Just speak 3 words of Latin and English or Gratin. Couldn't I get by with just these?
You can boo boo boo.
Doing that.
In a beat up a key.
But tell me, Keenan, what do I do when the boys boo me?
You'd better listen to a boy with the dope.
What do I answer when they holler for hope?
Well, let's see.
What do I answer when they holler?
No hope. You'll think of something when they holler.
Hey, a hope.
Time marches back. 1942. Germany puts saboteurs ashore from submarine, and United States Marines start march to Tokyo on Guadalcanal. 1942, and as Selective Service seeks out bachelors first, thinking men are saying,
Honey, I think we ought to get married.
Harry, not so loud. Daddy said if he heard you propose to me once more, he'd throw you out of the house.
He won't hear me if I kiss her. Oh, fine. Here comes your little sister.
Hello, Marilyn. Hello, Harry. What you doing?
Well, we were just about to, we were playing.
Can I play?
The game we were playing is just for two.
Then why did Daddy tell me to come down and play with you?
He did, huh?
Oh, for heaven's sake. I've got half a mind to marry you, Harry, just to spite my parents.
Oh, wait a minute now. Don't
do that.
But, Harry, you just asked me.
Yeah, but don't get your folks sore at me. We got to have a place to live.
Why don't you stay where you live now, Harry?
Look, here's a quarter, honey. Go on back. No, on second thought, no, I won't give it to you. I think your old man gets a piece of your take.
Couldn't we go to a movie, Harry? At the Strand, there's My Favorite Blonde with Madeline Carroll and Bob Hope.
What's at the Rivoli?
Louisiana Purchase with Zarina and Bob Hope.
What's at the Paramount?
Nothing But the Truth with Paulette Goddard and Bob Hope.
Let's go shoot some pool, eh?
We could go see Holiday Inn at the Bijou.
Who's in that picture?
Fred Astaire.
Oh, great. Great dancer. Who else?
Marjorie Reynolds.
Yeah? Well, let's go.
And Bing Crosby.
Let's go shoot some pool.
Harry, if you stay here, I'll sing for you. I'll sing. I got spurs that jingle dangle.
Oh, not that again. No, I'm getting out of here.
Oh, Harry, don't be mad. Remember this summer how you sang... Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me.
Not me. Maybe we ought to go see that Holiday Inn picture. I want to learn how that guy with the ears sings.
You know, I'm a dreaming of a white Christmas.
Oh, that's so pretty, Harry. And sweet and sentimental. Why aren't people sentimental anymore, Harry? I mean, really.
Oh, they are, really. Nothing more sentimental than that new song by Jerome Kern. It goes like this.
Dearly beloved, how clearly I see somewhere in heaven you were fashioned for me. Angel eyes, do you? Angel voices, let me through. Nothing could save me. Fate gave me a sign. Come shower or shine. So I say, merely, dearly beloved, be
Lang, are you interested in statistics?
Statistics, yes, sir. There's one thing about statistics that always interested me, Ken.
Oh, you mean how to get them?
How to spell it.
Yeah. Well, then you wouldn't care to hear that the milk supply of the United States, the milk we drink and the milk that goes into the manufacture of cheese, is supplied by about 5 million dairy farmers.
Could have fooled me. I figured most of it was supplied by cows.
Well, there are over 26 million of those.
A lot of beef.
But you get no beef from the dairy farmers.
Just milk.
No beefs either, Bing. Just think, in spite of the fact that farms are short-handed, production is rising. The goal for milk production for 44 figures to be 2% higher than the 121,237,000,000 pounds produced in 43.
That's rising. Those farmers do a little rising of their own.
Oh, yes, sir. Every morning, rain, shine, snow, or sleet, those cows have got to be milked. There aren't any furloughs, no days off at a dairy farm.
Pretty inspiring thing, in my opinion. You know, those men don't get to fly any Army, Navy, E over their places. Nobody comes around to pat them on the back and edge them along. Hardly any public recognition at all. I doubt if they even get a civil word from the cows.
They'd hear from those cows, though, if they stopped milking them.
I guess they would, but the folks on the farm, living close to nature as they do, must certainly find that much springs from their own hearts. And the song go.
This road leads to Rainbowville, going my way. Up ahead, Bluebird Hill, going my way. Just pack a basket full of wishes, and off you start. Yet Sunday morning in your heart, round the bend, see a sign. Dreamer's highway, happiness down the line. Going my way, the smiles you gather will look well on you. Oh, I hope you're going my way too.
That's all there's left of this Thursday's meeting in the Old Craft Music Hall. Next Thursday meeting takes up again when we're playing the feature, Over and Above and Beyond. And in addition to our regular group, we've invited Mr. Jack Carson and his associate, Eddie, Tell You What I'm Going to Do, Ma. That's next Thursday, the same time meeting took up tonight. Until then, hasta la vista.
Gee, that's all I've got time for today. Please check out our podcasts on our website, www.americanradiotheater.org. You know, we put up a new podcast every month. If you want to hang out with other folks playing old-time radio, it's radiooutofthepast.org in the Fred Bertelsen Room. On Thursdays from 5:30 Pacific, that's 8:30 Eastern, and also on Saturday, 6 o'clock Pacific, that's 9 o'clock Eastern. Hope to see you soon!